Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Our next guest might inspire you to get out of your athleisure wear, which is a nice way of saying sweatpants, and put on something fancy and get ready for a night out in, while he brings a little cabaret into your life. Fashion designer, writer, and really good singer, Azim Ghezrahi has been performing at Cafe Carlyle since 2017. This winter, he became the first performer to record his cabaret act at the Carlyle without an audience and stream it online. His shows are a mix of comedy, music, shtick, and some banter, and always feature a special guest. Here's a clip of Isaac's duet with Suzanne Vega.
Sing.
Canta.
Sing a song.
Canta una canción.
Please keep it simple to last your whole life long.
Canta la vida.
Don't worry that it's not good enough for anyone else to hear. Just canta. My favorite part. La 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 la. Everybody sing now, ready?
Each show is available for 30 days after the premiere on events.broadwayworld.com. Right now, you can watch Isaac's show with actor Leah Delaria, which debuted on February 12th and will be available to watch until mid-March. The last performance in the series featuring a secret special guest premieres on March 19th, so stay tuned for that. And I'm so happy to speak with Isaac Ghezrahi. Hi, Isaac.
Hello.
So you've had these residencies at the Carlyle for years, but obviously everything had to change. Yes. When did you and your folks decide we're going to do this and we're going to do it virtually, even though we won't have an audience?
Well, you know, I mean, it was such a funny springtime last year. Mm. And I kept thinking, are you kidding me? Absolutely. By late 2020 and sort of certainly the beginning of 2021, things will rebound and we'll be back at the Carlyle. What good timing, right? Well, sometime over the summer, we realized that it was going to be a much longer haul. And, you know, at some point in the late summer, like I would say August, September, we started throwing the idea around. And, you know, we slowly, cautiously approached it. You know, I'm not kidding you, in producing it, I kept waiting for the shoe to drop where something horrible would happen and we weren't going to be able to do it. And every day there was like a new crazy obstacle. You know, for instance, Ben Walzer, who is the marvelous musical director and my collaborator now for like over 20 years, he's the band leader, etc. He writes the arrangements. And it turned out that, you know, he lives in Chicago now, and we suddenly realized that he would have to quarantine in New York for 2 weeks before doing the show, you know, and I thought, oh, well, that's that, right? I can't ask my friend to quarantine for 2 weeks. And he was like, no, you know, I guess everybody, all the musicians were so eager to kind of be in a room, and I think they were willing to do a lot to do so. You know, he flew to New York 2 weeks in advance and lived in a hotel for 2 weeks and quarantined, and then everybody quarantined, everybody tested, everybody was masked up, there were people on set. I mean, it was really a lot of precautions, but I think it was worth it. You know, I mean, it was such a joy for all of us.
What was something that you found out that you actually enjoyed about this experience without the live audience, with just you and your people in
right.
the room?
Well, you know, I mean, I approached it kind of the way I approach everything, with a kind of a thought or like a vision. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to sound, you know, weirdly religious or something or artistic or something, but you have to have some kind of a thought behind it, right? And I thought, well, how do you do a show without an audience in a club, right? But what ends up happening with me and the band always is that we have such an incredible rapport, and there are six others, you know, and they don't make the biggest laughing sound when they laugh, but they do laugh at stuff because they're really smart. And they also say stuff. They just, you know, in rehearsals, also in the club, they shout stuff out, you know? And so they're my friends, and it's like this kind of crazy, fun, big rehearsal that we're having where they kind of talk and they they participate. And what I thought, and I think I actually achieved, was that between my rapport with them and this audience kind of out there watching kind of our rapport and responding in that, responding sort of in kind, you know, like, oh, right, I'm in the room, you know. I mean, it isn't very far-fetched, and I think it works really well, you know.
It's funny. Part of it's funny. Sometimes it's a little bit darling. Sometimes it's a little bit saucy. It's really kind of an interesting mix.
Well, thank you. And also, there's usually like our almost like second to last number in each of the set. I mean, that's the way I kind of usually do my dramaturg or something of the show. There's always like a kind of a really personal tiny little number just before we finish, right? And I don't know why I think of it that way. It's sort of like my version of an 11 o'clock number. Mm-hmm. And so it always goes a little sad, but you know, what can you do? I feel like that's part of it, you know, that's part of it. And weirdly, that's the kind of thing that I was excited about making available to everybody, you know, this thing that usually I only have like a couple hundred people a week, you know, like maybe 400 people a week or something looking at. And now, you know, it's like a lot more people, so they can actually see it, right?
My guest is Isaac McGraw.
Just by streaming.
We're talking about his act at Cafe Carlisle, which is streaming on events.broadwayworld.com. So yeah, it's a little bit of a documentary, a little behind the scenes, mm-hmm. some beautifully
right.
crafted songs, but we also
Thank
get
you.
To see you talk and interact with your band. And I want to play a little bit of the banter. This is about Barbra Streisand.
I keep doing this song because I love it. It's called You're the Top. I think that's why it's my favorite song. I say that every time. Okay, it's by Mr. Culpepper, but with new lyrics by Mr. Isaac Mizrahi. I wrote some new lyrics. I figured I would write a sort of a holiday version. By the way, I read this song and I don't feel guilty about it because I went to see Streisand once and I thought, God, you see, that's why she does every word. She's not looking at, she doesn't have a music stand, nothing. She's standing there and not reading. And then Arnold, my husband, who's gay, by the way, nudged me and goes, points to the back of the house. Every word was projected from Mrs. Streisand, okay? Every single word. There was a bouncing ball, okay? On the, like, memories, I'm telling you. I mean, I'm not expecting this to climb the charts like Mariah's holiday song, but we'll give her a run for her money.
Okay, how much of that is improvised? Is that just you, stream of thought, you having a moment?
Well, you know, I mean, some of it is really improvised. I mean, the story about Streisand is something that I sometimes tell when I feel guilty about reading lyrics off a music stand, you know? But, you know, part of working in a club is this kind of extemporanea, is this kind of on the spot. And I feel like keeping it fresh, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I memorize a lot of songs you can't help memorizing, but this is a re-lyricization of, you know, You're the Top, and it's complicated and you got to get it right. So, and all of that memorization I can't do only because, A, I write so many versions of it, you know, of You're the Top. I keep writing versions of You're the Top. I don't know why. I should do a compilation of all my different you know, versions of it. But to keep it straight, I read it and I feel like, you know, just to set it up with the audience that I'm actually reading the lyrics. And then I think, well, you know, Brando and, you know, Brando always had like cue cards and Streisand, you know, like or whoever else, like you go see people and they have stuff projected, you know, so I can't afford the projections yet. I guess that's my next budget item, you know, so I won't even have to tell the audience that I'm reading, but...
Can we talk about some of your guests? The first show features
sure.
Suzanne Vega, who we heard in the intro, and the second show featured Jackie Hoffman, who is just a hoot. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting, how do
Such
you decide who's going to be joining you on stage?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of it had to do with people that I felt comfortable asking, right? People I sort of had entree to and understood and knew, and some of them were really good friends. Like Leah, by the way, Leah Delari and I have known each other for a minute. And so I felt right about reaching out. And there were like literally 15 others I reached out to. And what I found so hilarious was that like literally 15 people that I reached out to all said, oh, I'd love to do it, but I'm in Vancouver shooting, you know, fill in the blank, shooting X, right? And I thought like, well, that's 20 people now that I know in Vancouver who somehow managed to kind of overcome the crazy, you know, pandemic and get themselves there. And, you know, so there's more in the world going on through all of this than we would imagine, right? And by the way, what were we doing in New York? Why didn't we go to Vancouver? That sounds like a lot more fun than what we're having here, frankly. But anyway.
Well, Leah Delaria is, you know, she's a delight. And I want to listen to a clip from the trailer, and then we can talk about it on the other side.
Need your attention, because we have a guest coming out. She's my friend, Leah Delaria. I mean, you've been a star for a minute, darling.
I think the world kind of became aware of me in 1993 when I was the first openly gay comic on television in America.
Right. Leah is one of these people, like, I have to see everything that
Forget
she's
your
in, you know?
Troubles. Easy. Come on, get happy.
When I was a famous gay person in San Francisco in the 80s, you can imagine, I mean, the fight that we had going on at the time for our lives.
Hey, oh, sis, what's going on?
Happy days are here
finish. So what do you think is Leah's superpower as a performer?
You know, I have to tell you this. I think it's a kind of magnetism, a kind of star quality. Like, I'm not kidding you. All the guests I worked with, I did a duet with. You know, they all did their own number, and I did a duet with them. And each time I kind of went like, wow, this is like challenging. I got to wrestle for the spotlight here, you know? they really have this way, and especially Leah, you know, she's such a truthful creature, you know? Like, you look at her and you see exactly who she is within seconds, and she has this crazy quality, and I say this in the show, I say, like, she's one of those people I just have to see, like, no matter what she's in, no matter, like, if it's the teeniest little cameo or if it's, like, you know, the whole thing, I have to see it because I love her. I just love her so much. And I think that's, like, star quality. Is that what you call star quality, Allison? Like, no kidding.
I think so. You know, there are just some people who have that magnetism, and they can use it for good or evil, and we hope they use it for good. For good.
Right, exactly. Hopefully, right. Well, she uses it for an incredible good, you know. I mean, so many of us who watched her in her early years as this funny and a bit angry openly gay comic, right? Like, in the 80s, man, that was a time. And, you know, if you were in San Francisco, like, you could see her, or then eventually she became like this kind of icon for us, you know what I mean? So I really think that's an incredible that's an incredibly good thing she did with her star quality.
My guest is Isaac Mizrahi. His show is at the Cafe Carlisle. It's streaming on events.broadwayworld.com. Okay, so the March 19th one is up next, and you're keeping the special guest a secret for now. When will we know?
You know, I guess in about 2 weeks, right? Like, close to when we launch. And the thing is, you know, weirdly, the last guest is like the person that I know the best of all my guests. I mean, I've worked with them the most of all of the people. I'm trying to think. Well, yes, absolutely. I've been on stage with them a few times, and I love working with them.
Okay, that's the good hint. We're all going to start Googling after this segment. You know, sometimes when I talk to folks, creative folks, about this time, I always try to think about what is something from this time that you're going to take forward that has revealed itself to you about being creative, about making things, maybe even about yourself. And what are you going to take away from this time that we've all been working in under these unusual circumstances?
I'm so glad you asked, and I'm just going to give you an answer to that that is related to, like, what I'm thinking mostly about, right? You know, since it all started, I've been winnowing and winnowing and winnowing back what I really actually want in this world. And, you know, I started in show business. You've interviewed me many times before this. You know, I started like making puppet shows, and I started as a female impersonator. You know, I did Streisand at the age of 8 and Liza for anybody who would listen, you know. And then I went into fashion as this kind of default thing in order to sort of try to get away from this very parochial religious background, right? I got myself out of the house, you know, by getting a job. And that's how that took me. And it took me away. And the thing I am really learning about myself right now is that I must do this, you know, like the one thing that burnt me the entire time that I wasn't doing it was appearing on stage, and I made it happen, you know. And so now I'm going to focus most of my energy. I mean, is that a good answer to your question? Because I feel like it's bringing me back to this person that I need to be, you know, before I die. So I don't mean to be too dramatic. God forbid I should be too dramatic. But, you know, the point is that I feel like it's showing us the person that we really are. You know,
yeah.
It's just like running us through this mill, right? And by the time we get through to the other side, we are going to be like different people, you know, or we're going to shift, great big shifts.
Different.
And yeah. So, yeah.
What
different,
is...
and I am going to try to kind of really get mostly involved in show business. That's what I really, really want to do. That's what makes me feel the most vulnerable and the most clean, or something. That's
Last.
A crazy way of putting it, but yeah.
No, please continue.
I was going to say, like, somehow, you know, we watch, like, you know, the Olsen girls go from show business to fashion. We watch Sarah Jessica Parker make these wonderful shoes. But there are very few people who start as designers who end up as performers, you know. And that is my goal. Like, I want to end up being more famous for, you know, my work in show business than my work in fashion. That's my goal. And I told you first, Allison, seriously.
Well, we will check back with you every year at this time. I'm just putting it on the reminders now.
Yes, I like it. I'll set my alarm on my phone.
My guest has been Isaac Mizrahi. His show at the Cafe Carlyle is streaming on events.broadwayworld.com. You can watch the Lea Delaria performance for a few more weeks, and then the last performance premieres on March 19th with that special guest, which people are already guessing on our Slack channel. Isaac, thank you so much.
Thank you. You're the greatest. Thank you so much, Alice.